Hi, everybody. I'm Liz. I am an alcoholic, and through God's grace and Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober since June 12, 1985. And to me, that is an absolute miracle. Mm-hmm. Because I thought when I walked through the doors of Oak Street, I might be here a year. I didn't think I would stay, but I did. And I'm an only child, which doesn't make me a drunk. My parents weren't drunks. I got some relatives that are drunks. And I was a sickly kid, and I was an only child, and so I was spoiled rotten, mm-hmm. absolutely rotten. And one of the things that happened, I had a great aunt that thought that hot toddies were the answer for any kind of, if you got the sniffles, you got a hot toddy. I can remember my first hot toddy. I was 5 years old. She gave it to me. It tasted absolutely terrible. But when it went down and hit that stomach, that miracle happened. I was warm all over. And I drank a lot of hot toddies from then on because I got the sniffles a lot. Besides, I was sick. I had a heart condition. And so they were always very careful of me. But I'm an alcoholic, and I was born an alcoholic right from the get-go. So it's like, you know, and I sometimes had to stay in bed for long periods of time so that the heart would heal. And then I would get out of bed, and I became this wild maniac. You know, I got in fight with boys. I love beating boys up. You know, they'd say something smart to me, and I'd punch them. And I'd ride horses, and I'd go out in the field and catch a horse. She'd have no halter on, bridle, or anything. Jump on its back and go to the barn full force, you know. My mother's out there going, she's going to die, mm-hmm. you know. But that was just me. I was very lucky. I had parents that absolutely loved me and want to give me everything. I went to ballet class, tap. I got kicked out of ballet because I'm as clumsy as hell. You know, and I did piano, I did clarinet, you know, I sang in the choir, I went to church, didn't like church very much. I loved going to the Catholic church. My neighbors were Catholic, and I loved going to their church, and I couldn't figure, you know, and I would sit through these masses, had no idea what they were saying, you know, because at that time they were all in Latin. But I just loved it. And I go to my church, and it weren't worth a damn. And I have no idea why. But later on, since my best friend was a Catholic, we stole the holy water bottle, emptied it, and filled it with wine, and we'd go out drinking. Altar wine is not the best wine in the world to drink either. And I always used to say, you know, she's the one that's going to hell because she helps. I'm not Catholic, so it doesn't make any difference to me. You know. But, you know, I was just an absolute. I was in 4-H, showed horses. And I always like to tell one story. You know, horses are wonderful, and I love horses and stuff like that. But in the cow barn, there was a lot of good-looking guys, you know, and so I decided that I needed a cow, you know, so that I could show a cow. So my dad bought me a registered black Angus, beautiful. I named him Alfie, and Alfie got out and ran up and down the road for a few hours, and when I finally got Alfie back home, I decided Alfie didn't want to be in my world anymore. So Alfie went to the slaughterhouse, and every time we ate Alfie, I would tell him, I said, you know, if you hadn't took off and ran around, you'd be still alive today. you know, and that was my brain thought. If you didn't do what I wanted you to do, you know, you could just go. And I didn't matter. I also got kicked out of 4-H because I hit a judge. They weren't doing what... They were not doing it right. I had a thing about rules. You know, you should follow the rules. I got the book out about the rules, and that this judge was not doing it right. So I held a strike, and he grabbed my horse, and I don't know. I heard someone say hit him, and I did. And I got kicked out of 4-H. And that was just kind of like things that, you know, I did. I was always doing something. I had this mind, which I sometimes have today, that just thinks of things, of to do. And I had these cousins that would do what I told them to do. And then I could blame them for anything that went wrong. And I had them steal cars, you know, my parents' cars, and we'd go out running around. And, you know, when my parents weren't home, we had great fun. They couldn't figure out, you know, we lived on a farm. We had the big thing where you had fuel oil for the tractors and stuff. And all you had to do is go over there and, you know, fill up the car and off we could go. We could chase guys and, you know. And I grew up in this little town in Michigan that everybody knew your name. And everybody knew what you did. And I got off, kicked off the school bus because I hit a guy. And I did not realize that when guys were picking on you, they liked you. And he started picking on me, and I just stuck a little protractor in his leg. And his dad was a bus driver, so I had to find different transportation to ride to school. So what I did, not having a driver's license, I thought, and we had extra cars at the house, I just wait till my parents went to work, and then I drive myself to school. Park a couple streets over, and walk in. Sometimes I would take a horse and hitch him up to a cart and drive to school. And my best friend was Valerie Victorian, that girl I stole the holy water bottle with. And I'd meet her at the front door. She'd jump in the cart, and off we'd go to the farm. Like nobody would see us. We never got in trouble. Never got in trouble. And I was just wild. And my parents had racehorses. And there's nothing better than the racetrack. There's booze. There's men. I loved men. There's fast money. There's con. It is very exciting. You know? And I love things like Al Capone. I thought they were, you know, he was a wonderful man. And you know, my illusion of things were just totally off. But I loved the racetrack, you know, and they did lots of things. And I got to sit into some places and be with some people that, you know, did things that you could get in lots of trouble for. And, but it was exciting. It was absolutely exciting. And they drank like I like to drink, and I like to drink. And I quit school because I wanted to be on the road and travel. And I did. I traveled all over the United States with horses, and it was great fun. And I worked for those guys that worked in the underground a lot of times. I did the, but this was clean money. This wasn't dirty money. This was laundering money. And so it was great fun. It was absolutely great fun. And then I kind of fell in love, but not really. But he was a nice-looking guy. And I was like 17. He asked my mom if I'd marry him, and she said yes, and I got married. And then I found out about sex and all that other stuff, happy stuff, and I got divorced like 3 months later. And like I said, I was just... My poor parents, I put them through so much stuff. I was just absolutely, and I was a good student. I was a straight A student. I had to always sit in the front of the room because if you put me in the back of the room, I talked, saw what everybody else was doing. I can do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you sit me in the back of the room, I'll talk. I'll see what everybody else is doing and not pay attention. But if I sit in front, it's like, okay, now I got to watch. So it's just that I do those kind of things. And then I ran off. I love cowboys. I absolutely love cowboys. Kind of like them still today. But, you know, there was this guy that came in. He had beautiful blue eyes and nice cowboy hat, nice boots. He walked away real well, and I decided that I needed him, and he really needed me, and so I went traveling around the country with him, and I ended up getting pregnant, and I didn't marry him. And then I had a child, and he was very abusive. And the last time that he laid his hands on me, I had this very keen alcoholic mind. I decided I'm going home to my daddy because I'm a daddy's girl. And I called daddy and I said, you need to come get me. Because the last time he did it before that, my mother took a gun to his head and said, if you ever hit her again, I'll kill you. Well, mommy wasn't there, but daddy was closer. And I called and I had all my stuff packed. He didn't even know I had it packed. He went to work and I left with daddy. And about, maybe 6 months ago or so, my eldest son, his son has become well acquainted with that side of the family. And he brought me a picture of his dad on this horse. And I looked at this horse and it was my horse. Mm-hmm. It was my horse that I left. And I all of a sudden had this resentment that was 50 years old over this freaking horse, you know, and I left it. You know, it was all me. It's nothing. And I said, I wonder what happened to that horse. That was my favorite horse. I raised that horse since he was a baby. Went on and on and on in my head. And finally I had to let it go because, you know, that's my insanity. That'll take me back to drinking. And I'm drinking during this period of time. And I always had these boyfriends that would say, maybe you drink too much, and I think you're crazy. I don't drink too much. And then I ended up marrying the last one. And he had loved me since I was 16 years old. And he went to Vietnam. Now, you have to think about this. He was a jockey. He was 5'1", and he got drafted. So he came right here. He loved to dance slow with me. And, and you know, and I knew that he had potential. And besides, he let me drink most of the time like I wanted to drink. And I'm a blackout drinker. And I wake up in strange places with strange people. Sometimes you have your clothes on, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have your car, sometimes you don't. You know, sometimes you remember names, sometimes you don't, you know, and then you're always trying to figure out what happened. Or you wake up in the middle of a fight as you're coming out of a black. Those are always fun. And you know the first thing is you blame them because it's not your fault. You immediately go, why are you doing this? And you know you have the script in your head how it should go. And sometimes they follow the script and sometimes they don't. And I'm also a mailbox hitter. You know, I don't hit cars, I hit mailboxes. And it doesn't matter if it's on the left side of the road or on the right side of the road. I can cross over and hit it or I can hit it this way. It doesn't matter. And I always was out there in the morning looking to see if I had any new drunk bumps on my car. And so now I have three kids, and he runs off with, which I refer to is what I call girls that hang on the rail and like jockeys, rail rats. And he ran off with her, and I was devastated. But the only thing I wasn't devastated, now I could drink like I wanted to drink. But I had three kids. And I had a house in suburbia. And I didn't have an education because I quit school. And I started my adventure working myself to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there were some things that I did get. I went back to school and got a high school diploma. And I worked off and on the racetrack, and I drug those kids all over the country to do things. And, you know, it was kind of insane. And I got to drink like I wanted to drink. Yesterday, I was chairing a meeting, and my son gave the lead, my oldest son, and he said, she always had wonderful parties. And I'm thinking, you were supposed to be in bed. And he was telling me about these wonderful, he was telling everybody about these wonderful parties I had and all the booze and stuff like that. And now I'm sitting there thinking, now, I know that they drank, but he was talking like real young, like he was 8 years old. And I'm thinking, I didn't see them doing all that. And then he proceeded to talk about stealing my drugs. And I'm thinking, I didn't know he did that. I know when he got older he did. And he also would steal my car and sell it to the dope boys. But, you know, I was like, when did all this happen? And I loved my veterinarians that worked on the horses because that's where I got all my stuff from. You know, and I don't know if any of you done horse drugs. I love horse drugs. There is this one, especially if you have a hangover. If you ever been on a horse when you had a hangover and they hit the ground, it goes all the way up the saddle to your head. And it just goes boom, boom, boom. But there's this little horse drug. It's about this big. And you can just take a little chip off of it. And you can take it. And you know what? Pain's gone. And I like anything to get rid of pain. And I did lots of things to get rid of pain. And I was laughing at him as he was telling the story about me. And I thought, oh, my God, I didn't even remember that. And I love how more will be revealed. It doesn't matter how long you're sober or what. Never got a DUI, never got locked up, did a lot of white-collar crimes that I should have got locked up for, and I should have got DUIs many, many times. And I was just lucky. And I was insane, and I did all kinds of things, and I loved drinking, and I absolutely loved it. It didn't matter, and I loved bars. I love the tinkle of the glasses, the people in there. It was always exciting. And I would always say things to myself. I'm going to leave after happy hour. And, you know, happy hour became 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I go home, and I got a job, I don't know how, working for the state of Ohio. And I did 9 years drinking for the state of Ohio, and I did the rest of my 30 years sober. And I ended up becoming president of the union. I was negotiating a contract, going in the restroom, doing some little white powder because it made you smarter. And probably not. And then I'd go out drinking with the union reps afterwards. And everything was just absolutely insane. And I have 3 alcoholic boys that were just as crazy as me. Absolutely nuts. And I refer to the year of the Thanksgiving turkey, which was 1984. Now, I did not cook very well. We went to therapy for 2 years about my cooking. And nobody talked about anybody using or anything. We talked about how I cooked. I did not cook right. And so my solution to the cooking problem was buy a crock pot. You can throw everything in the crock pot. They can come home from school. I can go to the bar. They have food, fine. You know, we had a VCR, not a problem. You know, it could keep them. We were that house that you didn't send your kids to. You know, that house on the street in suburbia, didn't send your kids to there because it was bad. And we were bad. And so I cooked a turkey. I did not first cook turkey I ever cooked. I did not know that you don't put them on at midnight and cook them till noon the next day. They get very dry and very shriveled up. And in the process of me cooking a turkey for 12 hours, unless it was a small child that you could cook for that long, a regular 15-pound turkey doesn't need to cook that long. And so this is why I need cooking classes all the time. And my son, John, stole my car, and he got picked up by the state boys. And he had been drinking, and always my kids, on any kind of holiday, always got in trouble. It was like I hated holidays because I knew one of them was going to get arrested for doing something. And at that time, I was drinking with the prosecuting attorneys in my county and the state boys. So it just happened one of the state boys is the one that picked him up. So he called me and came and got me, and I went and got pick up my car. But he took him to juvie jail. And, of course, I work in that county, and I know everybody in juvie jail. And so they kind of petted him and let him go. And then within 6 weeks, him and my youngest son was picked up again for stealing some money and got arrested. We're in jail. And he broke down and cried and said he was alcoholic and a drug addict. And the care unit at that time was going strong. They had an adolescent unit. So, and I had good insurance. Off he went to the care unit. I immediately called the doctor because, my God, I got a kid that's alcoholic and a drug addict. I need something to calm me down. You know, besides booze. And I intuitively knew you do not go to the care unit drinking. But it would be perfectly go okay taking Valium. Now, I did, as when I was 16, have a Valium deficiency. Like most girls, when they're going through puberty and stuff like that, they have Valium deficiencies. And I had little blues, and I would get 100 once a month. And they're so wonderful to drink on. You know, they just put you right there, right quick. And I always like being there right quick. And so they gave me some of those. So I had my little bag of pills in my purse, and off I go to the care unit. And then I wait to go home to drink. You know, because I knew that I didn't want them to smell. Now, John told stories about me, about doing all the stuff that I've done. And when I was talking to his counselor, I said, you know, that was when I was young and I was a hippie. And I lived in Mount Adams. You know, that was not now. And she went, yeah, you know. And so John went through and he got a sponsor as he was in treatment. And this sponsor was a guy in a multicolored trench coat. He had hair down to here. He had black rings under his eyes. And my son says, that's my sponsor, Dave. I said, he's on drugs. He looks like a pimp. You know? And what ended up happening with Dave, John got into lots of trouble. And he ended up going to Columbus to juvie jail. And in the process of him getting in trouble, Michael got in trouble. He got picked up for possession of cocaine. He wanted to go to the place that John went, so back to the care unit we go. And in the process, they had a family program where they say what you like and what you don't like. And he said to the youngest one, who was 14 at the time, he said, you know, I liked it when you shared your drugs with me. And I thought, I'm batting 1,000. Yeah. You know, and I still hadn't got sober. I went to Al-Anon because in Al-Anon you can drink. Yeah. You know, why wouldn't anybody go to Al-Anon? You can work steps, you can drink, you know, it's a great time. And I thought, you know, I'm helping take care of the problem. Mm-hmm. So off I go to Al-Anon, and Michael's in treatment, then Robert goes in treatment, then I caught John shooting up, he goes in treatment, and I was laying on the couch one night, and I was going to stop drinking, not because I thought it was going to look good for them. And John had went AWOL, and in the process of him going AWOL, the only prayer I knew that 911 prayer, God, get me out of this, and I'm never, ever going to do this again. I would always be saying that when I was puking up in the bathroom somewhere. And say, I'm never, ever going to do it again. And then I can remember my mother saying, what did you eat? Did you drink too much? And I said, no, I had some French fried mushrooms, and they were terrible. I think I got food poisoning. It was because I was drinking. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have any French fried mushrooms. And then I remember she took me to the doctor, and here I am in my 30s, and she's taking me to the doctor. Mm. And he said to me, he says, I think you have an ulcer. And I said, I think so too. He says, do you drink? I said, I have two every once in a while. Now, my two was a mason jar, this tall, filled, very little ice, and almost 100% booze. And I would have two of them. Now, that's only two. That's two glasses. And, you know, that is more than like 3/4 of a fifth. And that's what I would drink. I had a pound of pot in my linen closet and 2,500 Quaaludes. Now, anybody that's young, Quaaludes were really good. You didn't die from them or anything. And they were really good a long time ago. But they don't make them anymore. So, can't ever have that fun. But, you know, and so here I am in this dilemma, and John went AWOL, and I'm praying, and I'm saying the only prayer that I had learned was the serenity prayer, and I kept saying it over and over again. And all of a sudden I heard someone say, "Who's the real alcoholic?" And I knew it was me. And I called that, I got an Al-Anon sponsor. She just happened to be in AA, and she was already doing what it tells you to do in the book of working with others. She'd tell me little stories about her and her kids, because her kids were all alcoholic too. And she'd talk about, I'd tell them about cleaning my kids' room out, taking all my drugs back. And I didn't tell her I did them right after I took them back, but she'd talk about cleaning her kids' room and, you know, taking them back. And she'd talk about, you know, some of their behavior, and I talk about, you know, some of my behavior with them. And I called her up, and I said, "I think I'm an alcoholic," and she laughed, and I thought she was a bitch. I was crying. I thought this was terrible. You know, how could she think of it? And the next day is the day I stepped into Oak Street on June 12th, and I haven't had a drug or a drink since. And as I was on the steps of Oak Street, there was this happy lady that came up to me, and she goes, "Hi, I'm Patty, and I'm so glad you're here." And I thought, she's on drugs. I know she's on drugs. So I followed Patty around for a bit to see who her supplier was in Oak Street. And no one's, and she would tell, you know, get phone numbers. Call people, go to a meeting every day, read the book. And so I did what she told them new girls to do. Of course, I hadn't asked her to sponsor me because I was not ready for that yet. And eventually I went up there and asked her to sponsor me. And I was afraid of those steps because there was God. And I knew that I had done enough stuff that God didn't like me, and I was going to hell. And so she would say, "It's the God of your understanding. What do you think God is?" And I said, "Oh, white light." And whatever, you know, just to get her off my back. And then she, you know, she says, "Oh, you got to say your third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. And you have to have your inventory done in a month." I said, "Oh." So as I was driving to her house after she had already made the appointment, and I'm going through thinking, because all I could think about is in the book it talks about building that arch, you know, and I wanted to make sure that my arch was all solid. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, I hate my stepmother. And so I'm driving down 275, Norma, for marrying my dad, you know. And then there was that things that I wasn't ever going to tell anybody. We walked into her house. We said the third step, and she looked at me, and she says, "Now tell me what you're not going to tell me." I thought, I knew I made a wrong choice. And I did. And when I left there, she says, "You're just a garden variety drunk." And I felt at peace. And I went home and did exactly what she said. Now, I watched my kids come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And they kept going in and out, in and out, in and out. And they just couldn't stay sober. So, and it scared me watching them. Because I saw the pain every time they had to come back in again. And I didn't want that. And so I kept doing, they said, "Do service work." And I said, "Okay." And they made me a treasurer of a meeting in Mount Washington. And I was so afraid because my kids were always stealing money off of me. So I collect the money from the meeting, and I hide it in my bra and sleep with it that night till I could get it to the bank the next morning. And I knew they wouldn't come and get it because I'd sure wake up if somebody tried to get in my bra. And, you know, just the insanity things, and I kept showing up and doing things. I got involved with Intergroup really early in 1986, and I became the Grapevine rep, and then I became secretary. And and I ended up with people to sponsor, which absolutely amazed me. The first one that asked me, I called my sponsor up, and I said, somebody asked me to be a, and it, we had to use a payphone. You know, I called her with a quarter, and I called her up and asked her about it, and she says, "Don't you think you need some help?" I said, I don't know. Go back and tell her yes. And I did. And then she told me, she says, find somebody in, you know, Claremont County. I lived in Claremont County. I said, there is no women getting sober in Claremont County. No women at all. Found one. I got her number. I called her every day. Finally, I broke her down and she asked me to sponsor her. And I kept her for about 20 years and then she went back out and drank again. Now she's back again. But, you know, I did all kinds of weird things. I was a year and a half sober and trying to do everything possible I could do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my son, John, committed suicide. And I thought I could die. I was going to die. You know, he couldn't stay sober in AA. And he didn't hear the music that I hear when I walk into a meeting. And, you know, it's like it doesn't matter what's going on with me. I can walk into a meeting and smell the coffee, hear the laughter, and I know it's going to be okay. And he just couldn't hear that. And I watched my family fall apart. And I watched Alcoholics Anonymous take care of me. They wrapped their arms around me and drug me to meetings, made me do things that I didn't want to do, and I just kept going. And I got some outside help because I needed it. And I watched one son get sober, because no alcoholic ever dies in vain. I watched one son get sober, and then I watched the other one take one hell of a path, you know? But I kept working Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability. And what an amazing thing. You know, one of the things that was on my list is that, kind of like on my bucket list when I was a kid, is I always wanted to graduate from college. And, of course, I was too busy running the deal to do that. And what I did is I went back to college. I worked 40 hours a week, went to a meeting almost every day, and graduated from college. Now, it took me a long time. It wasn't like I did it, you know, like normal people do it. I'm alcoholic. We do one class, maybe a quarter, two classes a quarter, sometimes three classes a quarter, you know. But when I got to walk down that aisle, both of my sons were there. And what a miracle that was. And I, you know, I accomplished the, one of those goals that I wanted to have, that I always wanted to have as a kid. And then, what, 8 years later, I retired. Started a whole new thing. You know, a whole new business that I really do enjoy today. So, you know, it doesn't matter, but you know, I got to learn so many things. I got to do so many things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have had so much fun here. Absolutely a blast. I got to be with the Sister City Project with the Soviet Union. And we had the big book translated into Russian. We sent it over there, got stolen. Mm. Went on the black market. We had to go get some more. And send some more to over there. I didn't get to go and take meetings over there because I had knee surgery. So after I found out how bad it was over there, I was so glad I had knee surgery. You know, it's like God gave me a gift. You know, and I've had, you know, I've had different things happen to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I lost both my parents. And I was at, and it was hard, but I was at my dad, getting ready for my dad's funeral. And it was in Michigan, and they have a little clubhouse there. And I was at the clubhouse, and we were talking about gratitude. And I was thinking, you know, I'm so grateful this meeting was here. Because I had been to this meeting when my son died. And I was so grateful they're here. And this guy comes up to me after the meeting, and he looks at me, and he says, I know all about you. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. Blackout, high school. Oh, please let me have my clothes on when I saw him. And And he says to me, he said, your dad told me all about you. My dad was an alcoholic. And your dad took me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And what happened is when my dad would come visit me in Cincinnati, he'd go to a meeting with me. He went and got that big book, and he read that big book. And so he told that guy my story. And that guy's brother was one of my dad's pallbearers. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not like, you know, we don't know who we're going to help. All we got to do is be a big book for show somebody, and it can help somebody else. The day after I went to Oak Street, I went to work and proceeded to tell everybody I was a drunk. And I was so excited because I always wanted to go to the psych ward for a vacation. Yeah. I thought it would be really good, you know, you could get free drugs, you wouldn't have to answer the phone, and, you know, and I wouldn't have to worry about the kids, and I'd get some rest. But then I was so scared they'd keep me that I wouldn't do it. And, you know, now I knew what was with me. All I have to do is go to meetings and work these stupid steps, you know, and I'm going to get better. And they keep telling me that I'm going to have this wonderful life. Yeah, and I have. You know, I've got to help with committees. I got to work on halfway houses. And I've got to meet so many people. I went to Washington, D.C., and there was a rock star that I was in love with when I was a teenager. He was so handsome. And I got to pick him up at the airport because he was speaking at this thing in Washington, D.C., their banquet, their international banquet. And I just knew the lady that was chairing, so she asked me to come up, and I got to go pick him up. I was so excited. And afterwards, I realized I'd let him carry his own luggage as I'm chatting away to him. And he was telling me about the first time he ever used pot was with the Beatles. And I was thinking, oh, God, that would have been so cool. And, you know. But he was just like me. He's just a garden variety drunk. And, you know, and it made me realize that we're all the same. It doesn't matter. You know, we can come from the gutter under a bridge. My oldest son ended up living under a bridge before he got sober. And he's really not a bad guy now, even though he does tell stories about me. And then you can meet the most influential people you want to meet. Doesn't matter. You know, we all suffer from a disease. And the solution is in this book. You know, I've got to go to Founders Day. And I always get so excited when I get to go to Founders Day. And I just look how everything happened. And what a miracle it is that one, just by talking to another alcoholic, how this thing can start. And it doesn't matter what's going on in my life. When I talk to another alcoholic, something changes in me. Because then I can see God. Because I can see God in you. I can't see God in me. But I can watch your life change and see God. And then I know the miracles. I've had many, many surgeries since I got sober. I have broken more bones since I got sober than I ever did when I was out drinking. And I'll take you to my last two experiences. So, I have very bad knees. So they did two knee replacements on me. I talked to the doctor. I said, listen, this is very simple. Let's do both knees at the same time because that's only one surgery, one recovery, because if we do one at a time, I might not come back. But if we do them both at the same time, I'm fine. So we did them both at the same time. 5.5 hours later, I have a massive heart attack. I die on the table. They didn't know if they were going to be, but if they had to shut off any of the blood, whether or not I'm going to keep my legs. And during that period of time, I felt God lift me up and hold me. It was very peaceful. There was no pain. It was absolutely beautiful. And he told me, I'm not done with you yet. And I said, and I am going to argue with God. And I said, you know, I really don't want to go back there. I like it here. And I heard my cardiologist say my name, and I thought, well, I don't really like him that much. But there was this very cute nurse, male nurse. He had tats all the way down here. Just as cute, that I was flirting with. As I'm having this massive heart attack, as they're taking me down to have surgery, because the stent that was already in my heart collapsed. And he said, Liz, and I went, hi, Miles. know, just give me a good-looking man, I'll do anything. You know, and I woke up, and I knew I at least had a purpose, and I had to go to a nursing home, and it was like a week and a half later, I had a bleed. My stomach is bleeding, and they had to take me in, and I had to have surgery on my stomach. So I'm back in the hospital. Usually they give me a private room because you guys come visit me. And, you know, we can disrupt people that are sleeping in the other bed by laughing, having a good time, you know, talking about shit. And so I had somebody in there, so I'm talking to her, and she tells me about her daughter. Her daughter's at River City. So I tell her about Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. The next day, they find her a different room. I have my room to myself. Now I get the lady comes in that has Alzheimer's and she fell, and they send her down for X-ray, and the family are sitting there talking about what are we going to do with Mom. I said, well, let me interrupt you for a minute. What I used to do is work with the elderly and disabled in all these programs in Claremont County that had to deal with Alzheimer's and stuff like that. So I proceeded to tell them, and I remembered the numbers. She came back, went to a different room. Said, ah, now I got my room to myself. So they were, the stomach doctor came in, and he says, it's amazing, you are healing so fast that you're going to be able to go home. He says, usually people, because I had to get 5 pints of blood. He says, usually people don't heal this fast. And I thought, well, I'm doing God's work, whatever. And this happened, you know. So the nurses put me to bed, and we're talking about kids and stuff like that. And I told her that I had lost a son at 17. And she says, the nurse down the hallway, her daughter committed suicide not too long, and she was 14 years old. Would you talk to her? So they changed all the shift around to bring her down so she could sit and talk to me. And the next morning I went home. You know, that's kind of how God works in my life. And I was real sick 3 years ago. Real sick. I was dying, absolutely dying. I was on the transplant list to get a new heart. And there was a series of events that happened to do that. And so I'm in the hospital, in ICU, on transplant 4. And one of my friends calls me up, and he says, my best friend's wife just got out of treatment. She needs a sponsor. I said, yeah, tell her that she's got to come to ICU at UC, you know, to see me because I can't get out anywhere. Because I had my big book, and I was still doing AA. So she came up, and I thought, you know, I give her a lot of credit because I don't know if I would have went and saw anybody in ICU. And we started going through the book. And I was in and out of the hospital like every other week for a long time. And they finally started getting me better. And they put a pacemaker in and defibrillator, and I haven't been back there since 2018. Yay. And I'm fine. And she stayed with me until I got well, and then she went away. You know? And I knew that I'm here for a reason. Don't know why, but I know I have to help drunks. Whatever I can do to help them makes me better. You know, I have this little house, and it's filled with animals. And it's an open house. Anybody can come. And I have people come in and out from all over. I always like to tell my one friend, Clarence, him and I know one another. He's an ex-jockey since 1969. He got sober on my couch in my living room. And he always says, you know, we never knew when we went out drinking who was going to come out. There either was the good Liz or the bad Liz. And I thought, and I told him, I said, and I didn't know either. I had no clue what was going to happen during those periods of time. And he said, always tells me, he says, but I like the Liz that you are today. And this amazing thing, because he always, anything happens. I remember one time I was having surgery and he was with my sponsor, Carol. And I get really goofy on that stuff. Really, as soon as, you know, they give you that little sleepy thing for you, you know, go, and I get really, really goofy. And so they said, you know, and they always ask your name, your birthday. So they asked me my name, and I told them Mrs. Smith. And and they laughed. I always like the best one when they did some heart work on me. And I come back, and I told Carol, I said, Carol, I can't get this song out of my head. And it was Dancing on the Ceiling with Lionel Richie. And the doctor came in and informed me that during the surgery, I sang to them Dancing on the Ceiling during the surgery.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, I never know what I'm going to do. And it's always a treat to find out what I've done. And but you know what? I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't think of any better place to be. You know, we all have interesting stories. We're all different in lots of ways, but we have that wonderful common bond and that love for one another. And there's this one part in the book that I absolutely love. Oh, I got it. No, I got one story real quick. The COVID story of my morning meeting. Hated women's meetings. Didn't like them all. Work on the women's luncheon all the time. Work on the Midwest Women's Conference. Don't like women's meetings. COVID begins. One of the first meetings I go to is a women's meeting. 6:45 in the morning. Every morning. 7 days a week. I'm still going to that 6:45 meeting. Women's meeting. Every morning. 7 days a week. Love them. Never met them before. And they come from, they're all over Cincinnati. We have Maine. Maine woman's got a good boyfriend. And we got North Carolina. We got Indiana. We got Dayton. And it's wonderful. You know, but my being so judgmental periodically has to leave, because then I'm easing God out when I get too judgmental. Okay, this is what I like. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who wanted it and needed it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, a sense of duty. Two, it's a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And that's from Dr. Bob's Nightmare, 181. Thank you.